Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. It is time once again for America's Most Haunted Radio. Very, very excited. I believe I earlier said I was I palpitating? Or was I? Well, anyway, I was doing something. Anyway, I am super excited because I love the show that we're going to discuss tonight. And the charming, lovely, and talented young women who are the stars of it. But before we discuss that, I believe we now have the world-famous Haunted Housewife, Teresa Argy, right here. Are you here, dear?
I am here. Ready for another
Not
show.
Not a moment too soon, or late, or whatever. What's happening?
Not much. Made it here before 10. I'm still not used to the new schedule with school being back, and so just been running around all day doing the normal housewife thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, for those of you who are not in Northeast Ohio, it is super hot once again. It was 91 degrees, and I'm up in my office where the air conditioning barely reaches. I literally have an ice pack in my pants. That's how hot it is in Northeast Ohio. All right, well, let's talk about the show tonight, because it is super rock-tastic, my friends. I really love this show. I started watching the first Oddities, but I got to tell you the truth be told, I like Oddities San Francisco even a little better. Eccentric Antique Shop, Love to Death, opened its doors through Science Channel for a second season of Oddities San Francisco, Saturdays at 8 p.m., Eastern and Pacific. Love to Death is more than just a store. It's the heart and soul of the oddest street in town. Owner Audra began her career working in a natural history store, and her personal collection grew from there. Audra is also an artist and makes the dioramas and jewelry in her upstairs studio. Perfectionist, Audra prides herself in hand-selecting the most perfect items for her shop, traveling from private collections to flea markets on a regular basis. Wednesday morning... What a remarkable coincidence that a person so perfectly suited to the name Wednesday Morning was in fact born with the name Wednesday Morning. Wednesday is a part-time goth model whose long-standing obsession with obscurities made her the perfect fit at Love to Death. The resident brainiac enjoys researching the origins of bizarre items and often goes into long historical and scientific tangents when explaining them to customers. A woman after my own heart. Well, I said a very brief hello to Wednesday. Do we also have Audra with us now?
Hello, I'm here.
Hello, ladies. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Well, as I said, I am a huge fan. And for some reason, I can't even remember why, you were both just extra special appealing in last week's show. I can't remember what was going on. What were you doing?
Oh,
it was important.
The skunk. We were playing with dead skunks.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was doing.
Yeah, and then Audra said, I thought you liked me. I love the way you said that.
Yeah.
I screamed at the television, Audra, I like you. But you didn't hear me.
That was pretty brutal.
You couldn't hear me. So anyway, yeah, it's a great show. I love it. It's so fun. I actually have very, very strong feelings and ties to San Francisco. My dad was actually born there, and he went to Berkeley. And when I worked for Technorati a little while back, who bought my first site, Blog Critics, as part of that deal, I then worked for them for a few years. And, of course, they're based in San Francisco. So we were out there fairly often, checking in on good old Technorati. So I just love, love, love the area. And you guys, of course, are in the Hate, which dates back to, I guess it's best known. I'm sure it goes back before that. But, you know, back to the hippie days. It was hippie central in the 60s. And it appears that it has continued along the same vein to this very day.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's very counterculture there for sure.
Yeah.
If you guys are kind of like the most normal people around, as far as I can tell.
Did he just insult us?
Normal is, it's a broad term, and of course, obviously, it's based on situational ethics. But yeah, you guys seem quite centered and together and cheerful. You seem to really enjoy what you do.
Yeah, we are actually pretty normal for the most part.
Yeah, in that respect, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, look, everyone's got their own path. Everyone treads their own path, and having chosen it, you know, the key is to be happy and successful within that, and obviously that's what you guys are doing. Why don't you give us a little bit of background, please, both on the shop and then yourselves, I mean, how you came together, and then we can go get into the show itself.
Well, for the shop started basically, I was making art and jewelry from a home studio, and I started a website and then eventually expanded into antiques because my collecting habit had kind of started to spin out of control, and I decided that I needed to kind of unload some of my collections. And then the next thing you know, I am in a brick-and-mortar location on Haight Street in San Francisco, and here I am 5 years later.
Okay, so that tells us the 5 years, and I'm assuming that the shop seems to do quite well. I mean, do you have steady? Looks like you have pretty steady customers, clientele. Has the show changed the dynamic of the shop at all?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of people that just want to come in and see. A lot of people don't even think the shop is real. You know, I get lots of emails, people wondering if they have to make an appointment to come and see it, or you know, they don't understand that it is a brick and mortar shop. And then you get a lot of people that just want to come in and they're surprised to see us in the store and just kind of want to watch us work, which is somewhat
awkward.
Awkward is a good word for that. You know, you turn around, someone's lurking behind a rack trying to take photos of you. It's like, oh my God,
yeah.
And you're working. It's like, oh, okay, that's right. I forgot about that.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, so it's
it looks
definitely
like
brought a new element into the store for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, has the business increased correspondingly, or is it a lot of people just soaking up the vibe, as it were?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, business has increased, and then there are the people that literally are tourists, and they just want to come in and check it out and say that they've been here, and, you know, I mean, but it's definitely helped business, yeah. And it's
excellent.
Brought out a lot of collectors as well. You know, collectors now know that we're here, and they know, like, what we stock usually, although our stock tends to go all over the board. Collectors of the strange know that we have strange things. So, cat's out of the bag now.
And Wednesday, how did you get
yes.
affiliated with the shop?
Well, I moved to San Francisco a few years back, maybe about 4 years, and I lived in the neighborhood of the shop. And I didn't really know anyone in San Francisco, but I discovered this shop. And I thought it was amazing. And not having any friends, you know, I ended up befriending Audra, and then I would just go there and hang out a lot. And it just became kind of like a joke type thing, or it's like a wayward home for goth girls, you know. And one day I was out looking, I was needing to pick up a second job, and I showed up there on my rounds, and I was just like, oh, you need some work? Well, I just so happen to have a position right now available, like today it had opened up, and then that's what happened, and then I got paid to hang out there.
Yeah, she had previously done a photo shoot for us, then she was hanging out, and she just happened to be there on the right day at the right time,
mm-hmm.
luckily.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, now here we are.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's my question. How does one become a part-time goth model?
No, there's not enough work to be a full-time goth model, I'll tell you that much.
So it's not by choice that you're a part-time goth model.
No, it's just not enough. I mean, I normally work for, you know, subculture and alternative designers and artists
And there's a lot out there, but not enough to really make it a full-time position. So, but to answer your question better, you know, I've been modeling for about 15 years now, and it just so happened with, in the beginning, friends that were making weird clothes and needed someone to wear them and take a photo so they could sell the clothes. And then I started getting paid gigs, and it kind of happened accidentally as doing a friend a favor, and then snowballed from there.
I saw you're from, is it San Antonio? I remember it was Texas. Was it San Antonio?
Yes. It is from San Antonio, Texas.
Not known as a hotbed of goth behavior and clothing.
No, it's not. I mean, Austin has some and San Antonio has some, but most people just leave as soon as they can. Well, not everyone, but some people.
Well, apparently you took that path. So how did the show itself come to be, and how did they find you and all that good stuff? Because I mean, it's like a marriage made in heaven. You know, you guys, I mean, it fits so well. Sort of, it's kind of just the next step, or I suppose to me in my mind, like I said, somewhat more interesting variation. You know, I mean, I certainly see the similarities with the New York shop, but you know, you guys are obviously your own people doing your own thing, and it just really seems to work. It's so fun. Anyway, I keep saying that. So tell me how the show came about, please.
The show almost didn't come about because they actually called me, the production company called me on the phone, and I thought they were joking, so I hung up on them. And I was like, okay, I didn't literally cut them off and hang up. But it was pretty much like, I'm kind of busy right now, you know, can you call me back at another time or email me kind of deal. And I got off the phone abruptly, and then they called back 5 minutes later, and they were like, will you please just look at our production company's website? Like, we're legit. And I was like, oh, and they're like, have you heard of a show called Oddities? And I, of course, have heard of it. I mean, anyone in this business would have heard of it, you know. And I was like, oh, okay, let me think about this for a second. Like, I had to absorb it. And then it just all kind of started snowballing from there. And then once it started moving pretty fast. And the next thing you know, we have cameras in our faces and we're totally nervous and just like, what are we doing? And it slowly evolved to the point to where we're able to function with cameras in our faces and not act like complete dorks. And
now we're just almost not complete dorks at all.
Yeah, I don't think that'll ever go away. We'll always have the dork in us. So.
Well, that's part of the appeal, I'm sure. Hey, you know, you did the exact right thing hanging up on them because they're well-known masochists.
I felt so bad afterwards. I was like, oh,
they want you to hang up on them over and over again. They love that.
The Hollywood thing, right?
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I've been approached a few times prior, and it just always seemed kind of wacky, you know, people wanting to come out and film in the store, and it just didn't seem like something that I wanted to do, but I knew of Oddities, and I knew what they did, and I had a lot of respect for the show, so once they said that, and I realized that they were legit, I was like, oh, yeah, that would definitely be something that I would want to be a part of, so I was really happy that they found me.
What would you each say is kind of your core competence in terms of what you do in the shop and as a result on TV?
Oh, man.
I know. It's such a broad range.
I suppose just what do you think you're best at? You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be I mean, you can pick any part of it, you know, or what is most fun, the most fun. But, you know, why do you think it works? What do you each individually think is the most important thing, shall we say, that you bring to it? You know, what aspect of what you do are you best at or is the most important or is just the most fun?
Well, I think
it's just a conversation starter, ladies.
I gotcha. The most important thing, I think, is to make sure that you're kind of making sure that you target, you're hitting everybody's audience. Like, you want to make sure there's something for everybody in the store. And, you know, with it being an oddity shop, a lot of people come in and just immediately dismiss it as, ew, gross, oh my gosh, this is so weird. Yet, you know, if you take your time and actually look around the store, you'll probably find that there is something in here that you'd want to take home with you. So for me, the fun part of it is generally just picking and buying for the store and making sure that I get things that will satisfy, like, the pickiest collectors and the 10-year-old little boys that come in, you know. It's a really wide range of items that I have to procure to keep this place interesting for everybody. And it's a challenge, but it's definitely fun. It's really, you know, it's definitely the funnest part about it for me.
And Wednesday, you go out and pick, or whatever term you want to use. I mean, you buy for the shop as well, don't you?
Yeah, I do, but it's mainly Audra that definitely does that. And in the respect of answering your question, I get really excited over weird facts and just stupid trivia. Maybe not stupid to some people, but when Audra brings in something to the store and somebody is looking at it and they have a question on it, that's when I, like, get all happy, because I get to talk about something weird. I get to complain about, you know, Victorian mourning customs or what hoodwinks are or whatever. And that's really fun, because it's, you know, sharing weird stuff is just fun. And hopefully they get to go and tell their friends, and, you know, you're spreading knowledge of bizarre everything. And so that's probably what I think that brings me the most pleasure out of that. I don't know if I'm good at it, but, you know, it's fun.
when you pounce. I pounce upon you to impart wisdom.
Yeah, I'm a pouncer, yes. Yeah, I get excited and talk over people and get all spaz. I spaz out on that, so that's me.
God,
spaz.
Me too. Good Lord. I was born talking over people, I'll tell you. Well, what is the, I'm interested, your knowledge, both of you, obviously, your knowledge is very broad and interesting and deep and eccentric and wide. What are kind of the basic sources of your knowledge? Where does all this come from?
Research. I mean, you know, doing a lot of reading. We both, I don't have as much time to read as I used to these days, but Wednesday I know as well. I mean, you know, we both, I was an avid reader for a long time until I started my own business, basically. I think reading is the best way to feed the brain, you know? I mean, that's how you learn the most, is what I think. And then when you find certain things that you want to research, you then hone your knowledge on those things by reading more and more about it, you know?
And if you come across someone that has that knowledge, you pick their brains. You ask them so many questions.
Yeah, experience. People that have had a lot of experience. Yeah.
And I'm sure you've gathered your own experience, and that's a lot of what you've learned. Teresa, it is certainly your turn. I'm sure you have questions, thoughts, comments. Please.
Oh, I do. I have a lot of questions. Welcome to the show. I am also a big fan of the show. I do enjoy the original Oddities from New York. And what I thought was unique about that show is how Mike and Evan look so much like the normal everyday people, the guy down the street, the girl next door. And they just seemed like the normal everyday people that I run into every day of my life, but then they have this unusual great little shop with all these cool things in it. And then when your show came out with San Francisco, it's like the same premise, but almost the opposite. The two of you and the people in your store are just as interesting as any of the objects that you pull out. Plus, it's San Francisco. So I thought it was a really unique twist on a different idea, unlike some of these other shows that you see that just take the same thing and plop them down in a different city and call it another show, and it doesn't work. But I think it's great. But the question I have you're welcome, for either of you is the things that come into the store, the things that are featured on the show, are those things set up in advance? Do you have any idea of what's coming in? Is it totally random, or is this something that's chosen by the producers? Because it just seems like you can't get any weirder and then it does. And is that like an everyday thing at the shop, or is this?
Oh, yeah, no. People bring in or email me with the weirdest things. I mean, I just, not two, what, 2 weeks, couple weeks ago, I had a gentleman email me with a photo of a severed hand and a Ziploc bag, and, you know, was looking to sell it. And it's just, it's amazing what people will try to sell. And I think what started, I think it's become more and more accessible for people since Oddities New York started, because they saw that you could sell these things. And when that started happening, it just kind of opened up the floodgates, and people are just, you know, they're like, that's worth money. I have that sitting in my basement, or, you know, so I think there's just so much of it coming out of the woodwork now that it's just, there's just a lot more of it coming to the surface.
So it's not like you have to really hunt for these things to, for an episode of the show. They're just weird enough stuff coming in every day?
Sometimes we do have to go out to collectors, people that we know, for things that we're looking for in particular, because, you know, mummified items are pretty hard to find. So you have to have people that you know that actually collect these things, because they tend to hoard them. They tend to find them themselves, and they're things that aren't easy to find. So you have to try to weasel them out of their collection sometimes. So, you know, that's kind of what you see a lot of on the show, is us going out to collections and people that we know trying to procure things for people that are looking for that one special item.
It's kind of bizarre to see the sort of things that people find as collectibles. things I never thought that existed. This is going to be a difficult question, so you don't have to give me the exact answer, but what is one of the weirdest things that has come into your shop that even surprised the two of you, even people who see these kind of things on a daily basis? Was there something that came in, or maybe even the most recent thing that came in, that you were like, what the hell? Where did this come from? And it was even blew you away.
Do you want me to go first, Audra? Yeah, if you've got, I mean, I know, I know you've got a goodie.
Yeah, it's just isn't my normal one, I'll tell you. Because we get this question kind of often, most bizarre or something item. We have a gentleman that used to come in and bring us things he'd find off the street, like discarded in dumpsters, and sometimes they were interesting. And sometimes we would do business with him. He brought in like a weird sculpture or something like that. But one time he came in with this doll, just a little cloth doll. And he's like, look, this doll looks kind of creepy. Would you like to buy it? And I looked at the doll, and I'm like, I don't think it's very creepy. He's like, well, what if it has maggots? I'm like, what? And he lifted the skirt, and the whole bottom pants of the doll was filled with live maggots because he had pulled it out of the dumpster. And it's just something you don't normally ever see. And I just like, no, please leave. I don't want your maggot doll. We don't want your maggot doll. Don't ever bring anything like that in again. And so that will never be scrubbed from my mind as long as I live.
Yeah, that
burned into
foul.
Your retina.
Disgusting
is
odd, I guess. And what about you, Audra? Anything that jumps out at you is just, like, too weird, you didn't want to deal with it, you didn't want to have it in your shop?
I had people try to sell me baby fetuses, and that just, for some reason, that just hits the roof of my limit. Like, that just takes it all the way to the top, and I'm just like, delete that email immediately.
You crossed
the
line.
Can't even, yeah, it's just, it's a very strange thing for me. I mean, and, you know, I know people collect very strange things, and that's fine, but to me, that's just like, that was really shocking for me. Like, for some reason, it was just like, there's no way I would ever want that in here.
Have you ever had anything come in the shop that people claimed was haunted?
Oh, well, the shop itself is haunted in one part, so, The upstairs part of the shop is definitely haunted. We've had people come in, and at first it was kind of funny. People would come in, and they would go up there, and they'd come back down, and it was where we used to have an art gallery, and it's now retail. And people would come back down, and they'd be like, you know, there's something up there, right? And we'd be like, whatever, you know, And it got to the point where it's been happening throughout the years, and it happens all the time now. Even the newest of my employees has experienced it 3 times. And people literally go beelining down the stairs and are just petrified, saying, you know, there's something upstairs. So apparently they whittled down to there's a man, there's the ghost of a man that was around in the 30s that is lurking around in our upstairs area. So the shop itself, I mean, it's the building's been here since 1905. But people claim the shop is haunted. I've never had any crazy experiences myself with, you know, with the shop. I mean, there's weird things where if I happen to come in here at night or something, a doll will randomly, we have a doll that I swear was something weird going on with it because three times I would come in here just to, you know, whatever, late at night, pick something up and the doll would be laying in the middle of the floor, probably like 5 to 7 feet from where it was on the shelf, the same doll. And I was just like, okay.
I will back
weird.
That story. I remember that.
Yeah. Like, I remember photographing it one time, just standing there like, I have to take a picture of this because this is just too crazy. It keeps happening. And no, I know nobody's doing it, you know. It's, so, you know, I don't know. I think the shop itself may have a little bit of, we might actually get some paranormal investigators out here for an episode or something.
That'd be
cool. Yeah.
I know, right?
Maybe people writing a book that's going to be finished tomorrow or Thursday called America's Most Haunted. They should be the ones.
I know, right? You're the time. You're the one that could hook us up with that.
Wednesday, have you experienced anything in the shop? Paranormal?
No, I haven't. But the I can back Audra's stories for sure. Like being seeing people come down the stairs. Because they have an upstairs gallery, and now, you know, there's stuff to buy up there as well. But anyway, I've seen people shoot down the stairs in terror, and women that are sensitive to those kind of things tell me that there's something up there. And we even have a little basement part, and I remember we've had employees that just didn't want to go down there. I've never experienced anything. I don't think I'm perhaps not sensitive to such things, but there's so many stories that it's weird. It's not in the shop itself. It's up in that exact upstairs area. So,
yeah,
located
really
in one area.
Yeah.
Well, I would imagine with being in the city and things being relatively well documented, you know, it'd be fun to have you try to trace down the history of the shop and see what might be causing that upstairs.
Well, didn't it used to be a theater, Audra? I thought it used to be a theater back in the 60s or before. Yeah.
Somebody told me it used to be a theater, but I've done some research on that, and I haven't been able to come up with anything other than it was a flower shop prior to me coming in, but I haven't been able to find anything on the theater. So I'd love to do some research on the building. Again, it's time, like but I should do it. We're all the Hate Street shops are trying to find out a little more history about their building, so I've got it on my list.
Get thee to researching.
Long.
Yeah, my list is very, very long.
Like,
you know, really,
very long.
But seriously, I would think that you know, if you do find out something somewhat interesting, or put it another way, probably anything you would find out would be pretty interesting, and that could fit into an episode one way or another.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm like Wednesday. You know, I myself haven't had, I think I've had like maybe one experience where it could have been an impossible ghost experience years and years ago, and I've always been kind of skeptic, but I'm definitely open to having someone come in and see what they would find, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's too much of a coincidence that everybody says the same thing, you know, when they say what they see up here, you know, the gray-haired man who's crunching
numbers.
And that
darn doll.
Seriously. Yeah, and the doll.
That peripatetic doll flopping around insouciantly. So that brings up a question I have that I've been wondering all along. How, being that the items, so many or most, are unusual, unique, strange, etc., How do you price them? I mean, how do you know? It sounds, I realize a lot, part of it's, you know, it's TV, but it seems like you guys know exactly what that should cost, or what exactly something you're buying, you know, should cost, or what, you know. So yes, sure, the negotiation process, I realize that's part of TV and whatnot, but I'm just wondering kind of what is the foundation, if in fact there is one, for your pricing.
Well, it depends on the item. I mean, a lot of times it can vary by what you actually paid for it, and then if you have any time invested in it, like the articulated piece that we did on last week's episode, you know, I actually had to invest time in helping to put this together. And
yes.
there was a lot that got edited out, of course, because, you know, that's TV. But that was a pretty brutal, like, couple of hours of skunk stuff.
Oh, my Lord, I can imagine. I can smell it through the TV.
I mean, the smell is just, you know, it was on me for a good 4 days after that. I mean, it just would not go away.
Did you go tomato juice?
No, that's supposed to be a myth.
It's
have
a true
much
myth.
I did not
bathe
in tomato juice.
Confirmed.
I did manage to
by your San Francisco
on...
neighbors there, confirmed by Mythbusters. No, actually, there's chemicals in it, in the tomato juice, that they bind to the, you know, smelliest portion to the molecules. The stinky molecules are bound easily, I guess, or readily to the tomato juice. So in a way, it's kind of like gum or something to the scent, and then you're just kind of pulling it off and then getting rid of it. So I know it works. It actually does.
Huh. We have a lot of skunks in North Carolina. Lots and lots of skunks out here.
We know skunk lore.
So you're
have you tried
any
tomato juice, Teresa? Does that work?
Tomato juice does work. Yeah, I've had many a dog that has chased a wayward skunk in the backyard, and it's happened many times. Sometimes it takes a double bath, but it seems to be the only thing that works, unfortunately. So right now my dog is smaller than a skunk, and I dress him up as a skunk for Halloween. He's all black, little 5-pound little mutt. And I have this skunk costume, which is basically just like a white striped sweater thing that I put on him, and I walk him on Halloween, and people clear out, and we got the whole street to ourselves going, house.
That's great.
Talking to skunk.
That's awesome.
We do it every year.
All you need is to carry some of those little stink bombs along with you and drop them as you want.
Yeah. There you go.
Don't need
that's rad.
I have my little boy, so he takes...
I think the police would show up pretty readily there. That's a great point. Halloween. Great point, Teresa. Do you guys do anything special for Halloween? We got it coming up.
Well, I don't know. Wednesday's a zombie lover, so she's probably got a bigger plan than I do.
Well, there's tons of things going on around the city. There's a zombie prom that's happening in October and all sorts of stuff. Halloween's kind of a weird day for me in the sense that I go out on Halloween and people tell me they like my costume and I'm not dressed up. And so it's what I used to do at other jobs is I would dress not like I do the rest of the year. So I dress like an angel with a blonde wig, or one year it was Pamela Anderson, you know. The whole idea of Halloween is to be someone you're not. So if I'd rather somebody enjoy my costume for a costume instead of, you know, telling me they like my wig when it's my real hair. But, yeah, so, I mean, I don't have anything special planned just yet. Audra, what are you doing on Halloween?
Hiding? I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
Okay.
Well, do you do anything with the shop? Do you do anything special at the shop for Halloween?
You know, it's funny. My mom was asking me, have you started buying for Halloween yet? And I was like, Mom, I buy for Halloween all year long. Like, you know. I'm always buying weird, creepy things that people normally buy, you know, during Halloween season. So, but as for the shop, no, I mean, you know, the kids come in costume and we give out candy, but we don't really do anything. We don't have a party or anything. I mean, it's, you know. Every day is Halloween at Love to Death.
Every day is Halloween at Love to Death. And then also you don't really want to invite some of the outside elements to get any crazier than they already are. So that's kind of dangerous.
It's true.
I love that this sometimes have a Krampus festival during near Christmas. So, you know, someone to dress up like Krampus and go in and beat the naughty people. So that's
I love fun. Krampus. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
goodness.
You know what? That's right. We actually celebrated Krampus for Christmas. We kind of had Halloween at Christmas time in here. We had a big party for that.
I forgot about that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know what you need to do?
We do it backwards.
Your soundtrack for the shop should be the old ministry tune, Every Day is Like Halloween, which is just one of my favorite songs of all time, I got
to
tell you.
I wonder how much they'd have to pay to get those rights.
Dun, 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 dun. In the pre-industrial days of ministry.
Yes. I heard he's not very proud of that album. What I understand.
No, he hates it. But and it's not an album. It's a series of albums. And he started off even earlier than that. I mean, he was really techno-pop. You know, by the time of Every Day is Like Halloween and All Day, that was a two-sided, I was a DJ, it was a double-sided 12-inch. There's a little bit harder edge, rhythmic edge to it by then. You know, that's kind of the step between the pre and then the balls out move to industrial. But I mean, that's his problem. I don't care if he likes it or not, you know.
Well,
he recorded
true.
It. There are great songs from that era. I love the industrial ministry too, but I love All Day, Every Day's Like Halloween, Work for Love,
yep.
Going further back, you know. God, I used to play those all the time at clubs. People loved them.
I love them. He doesn't.
Yeah.
I do.
You know, he just, I don't know, have you read his new book? I hear it's pretty entertaining.
I he spends a lot of time
either.
in Austin, Texas, where I'm kind of my stomping grounds.
Right.
He spends a lot of time there, so there's lots of people that know him, and his daughter lives there, actually, too. But yeah.
He is Brandon a peculiar
tribute.
Fellow.
Yes.
He's one of these guys like Keith Richards. Well, how can he be alive, you know?
Yeah, I know. I'm convinced Keith Richards is immortal. The man is completely immortal.
He
he's
may
just going to
well,
live
you know,
forever.
What he does, he uses the blood of virgins. He bathes in the blood of virgins.
I was just about to say that. He bathes in the blood of virgins.
Like, what was your name?
Bathory.
He had actually had his blood changed, like literally cycled out of his body and new blood cycled in 3 times.
Are you serious?
Oh, I believe.
I didn't know
Yeah.
You know, they're doing that in Vegas now. They have there's some shop, and I'm sure there's more than one by now, where the whole point is to cure your hangover, and where better than Vegas. And
they're
going to
have a reality show soon, I'm sure.
They literally cycle your blood. They purify. They take it out. They filter it. They purify it. And then they give you all kinds of crazy, you know, chemicals, all this stuff that's been coming out over the last decade or so, I suppose, or even longer than that now. Starting in the rave days, you know, they just give you all this stuff, and they don't claim to be, you know, 100%. I mean, if you come in absolutely blind, stinking, drunk / hungover, you won't walk out fresh as a daisy. But, you know, they're talking 75, you know, 85% improvement in the course of a couple hours. And so, I mean,
scam, Eric. It's a scam. You can do that by just getting an IV of fluids and get rid of your hangover.
Well,
that doesn't sound
that's
cool,
part of
though,
what they
the
do.
You mean, like, blood or blood? That sounds like a scam to me. I don't know.
I don't want to cycle my own blood.
Want my own blood back. Give me somebody else's blood. My blood is old. I want some new blood.
It sounds like a good reality TV show, to be honest.
I did not know that was happening. That's pretty.
Me neither.
I mean, I knew, like I said, I knew Keith Richards had done something similar to that, but I didn't know that it had hit the market, so to speak.
Keith Richards is dead. He died.
I live to impart knowledge.
Thank you.
He's a puppet.
Hey, now we're going to share that with other people. See, we've just enriched ourselves.
You can pass it on through the show. Hey, that brings up another question, and that's what this is, a series of questions. How do you, I've never quite felt the exact right placement for either of the Audi shows on Science Channel. Do you feel, I mean, I realize you can't say, I don't know what you can say or not say, but I mean, it just doesn't quite, I guess your guys are the far left of what's on Science Channel, and I've noticed they added, you know, they have done that the unexplained files thingy. So they, I mean, they're heading more that way because I'm sure that it does well, and of course the Morgan Freeman show does really well. But you know, it just seems like there's not an exact fit there. I don't know. I probably would put both of those shows somewhere else if it were me. But on the other hand, they certainly seem to support you, and support the shows, and they seem to really like you guys, and so all that's good.
Yeah, no, they're great to work with. I mean, you know, we're really excited to be on that channel. I don't know, maybe we're the a little bit of the spice of that channel. I mean, they also have Mythbusters too, so you know, they've got some more cutting edge shows, and I think they have more on the horizon as well. I mean, and then, you know, you have shows like How It's Made. Do you know how many guys I know that love that show? Is like, it's just a basic, like, how things are made. And I've taught myself, like, staring at the TV. I don't even really watch television, but, like, somehow it'll be on, and, you know, someone's watching it, and I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Like, I'm never
going to see a frozen
pizza again. Yeah, like, you know, it's interesting. What seems like it may not be, you know, once you actually sit and watch some of it, it's like, oh, okay. I think it's a really interesting channel. I mean, I think it's really diverse. And oddly enough, I think that it captures a younger audience as well. I mean,
yeah.
I know for our show, which is surprising, we have a huge fan base that are kids. I mean, a lot of who come in the store all, you know, glossy-eyed and starstruck are kids, and they're in love with the show, and they've watched every episode, and they can tell you all about it, and you know, we're like, wow.
Well, you know why that is?
That's crazy.
Because you're the eccentric hotties.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's true. We get parents that come in and like thank us for being on the Science Channel because it's a show that they can watch with their kids, and their kids will get interested in something with science or with history. And so maybe the kid isn't really into learning anatomy, but after watching one of our, you know, one of our shows, then it would go and look at something, and then it falls into a whole other path of education. So
yeah.
It does have, I think it does have a good fit on the Science Channel for educating the younger audience, and then everyone else just entertained by the weirdos.
Well, that's a good point that they do, and I'm sure it's coming from you and from the production company and perhaps from the channel as well. I mean, they do give you guys quite a bit of time to talk about the background of these things
mm-hmm.
and the educational aspects of it, the history, the anatomy, whatever the case may be. And that's a great part of the show, by the way. And I think you all – and we haven't mentioned Lincoln. I think he's great. He's a great addition. He's an interesting guy. He seems to know all kinds of cool stuff. And
awesome.
But all of you guys really, you know, do a real good job, I think, in painlessly educating. So I think that is a key part of the show.
We're teaching you and you don't even know it. It's like subliminal.
Yeah.
It's the best kind.
It's very sneaky education.
Yes. Look, Morticia Adams is telling us about spines.
That's why it's a family show, because the parents can relate to us, you know, being older and talking about these things, and who knows?
Oh, you guys can't be old.
Who knows what's making it work, but, well.
You guys can't be very old,
I have to say. Well, we're older than our core demographic, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
It's all relative.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Teresa, I kind of cut you off several times. I'm sure you have more.
I'm used to it. I think some of the appeal of this show, of Oddities, both the one in New York and especially the one in San Francisco, is because most of the country is very unlike San Francisco, especially the area you're in, and even parts of New York. And we've got tons of antique stores and resale shops and places like that in my area, but you can never go in there and get any of the things that you can find at your stores. Even the weirdest little shops and most off-the-wall boutiques, I mean, maybe you'll find one or two items, but you just don't find that kind of stuff around, and it's fascinating. And it kind of spoils people like me because, you know, I do like to go antiquing and go into shops, and I'm always looking for something unusual, maybe not to buy, just to see something, just to look at it. And, you know, you can't find anything like you see that you guys get. And you're like, well, how come they don't have severed hands and articulated
hands? Oddities, Cleveland.
Well, you know,
where's the stuff? Where's the dark stuff? Where's the creepy stuff? You know, and
a lot of times, flea markets and estate sales, going through dead people's things, I mean, you kind of have to know where to look. Like, you have to beeline for the closets and the basement and places where, you know, most people, like, they had for the closets, but they're looking for the brand name vintage dresses, you know. I'm looking in the shoe boxes and in the corners and, like, under things. And flea markets are another good place because people go there to sell things that, you know, they don't think that are hard to sell, per se, in, like, a normal antique shop, you know, that are too weird. So a lot of times flea markets are the key, too. But it's a lot of digging. It's definitely a lot of digging, and it's like finding a needle in a haystack. And, I mean, you know, you never know. You may find the estate of a doctor or a dentist, and it's like hitting the jackpot, you know. And nobody wants, like, most people, they don't want these things. You know, it takes a certain target market that wants these things. It's collectors, or they don't even know what they are.
I think,
you know,
sometimes,
even if they,
yeah, these estate sales are probably getting rid of this stuff thinking nobody will want it.
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend who buys out estates, and he's basically looking for jewelry and furniture. But I'm sure that there has been stuff that has been just overlooked and passed over because they think there's no market for it. And, you know, the weirdest things I've ever seen that wasn't on television have been in private collections. Some of my friends that collect, you know, strange books or jewelry or just weird art or stuff like that, but they've all been privately collected. When you ask them where they get it, you know, and it's always something very obscure or something that was going to be thrown away, or they had to hunt for it, maybe find it on eBay or something. So I think people are probably throwing away these treasures without even realizing.
Yeah. So much of it gets thrown away. It's crazy. I mean, you know, funeral homes, when they go out, a lot of that just gets trashed. And a lot of the items in funeral homes are, you know, that's like a jackpot for me.
Gold.
Yeah. Yes. No?
Do you buy much sight unseen? I mean, that you don't actually see in person, i.e., you know, the internet or whatever? Or is everything pretty much what you can touch?
I try not to buy sight unseen just because you don't really know what you're getting and you can't really, you know, think things. I mean, I have, of course, but most of the times they'll end up broken, damaged, not what they said they are. So, you know, I try not to do that. And I also have like a network of people that know what I collect and what I sell and what I like. And so they'll come to me. A lot of people that run estate sales, you know, they have weird stuff that they know that nobody's going to want anyhow, but they know that to me it would be gold. So, you know, they email me and let me know what they have. So it's kind of gotten to that point where people just, they start to know what, it's probably good for them too, because this is the kind of stuff that they're going to end up stuck with at the end of the estate sale, you know?
And you said the show has helped too. You said the show has helped too in that regard, just in terms of getting the word out.
Yeah, that's been a blessing and a curse when it comes to items.
I can imagine.
We've had that. Wednesday and I have talked about this, how it's people are now constantly like out trying to out weird us by, you know, bringing in or emailing the strangest things that you're just like, oh my god, no, like delete that, illegal, delete, like no, like, you know, people. So it's brought out a very strange element as well. But, you know, it's still entertaining, and it makes for some great storytelling.
Is there something that you've been looking for that you haven't been able to find, a particular item or something in particular that you've been searching for through private collectors or waiting for someone to bring it in and have been unable to acquire it or find it?
I've always wanted a mask of infamy, which was a mask that they would make you wear. Say if you were a thief, or they would even punish you way back in the early, like, 1400s, they would punish you if you were unkept, if you were smelly or dirty, they would put a mask on you, say like a pig mask that was made of metal, like heavy metal and steel, and they would padlock it onto your head, like around your neck, and they would make you walk through town in it, and they'd stone you if you were wearing any of these masks. It was like a punishment. And there was a collector that had a bunch of them, and he passed, but then I know his collection ended up in museums. They're really hard to find. They're very, very, very expensive. It's something I would probably never own, but I would love to have one in my collection just because it's such a bizarre item. I mean, can you imagine doing that now? You know, like how different it would be if we still did things like that.
There might be people who would enjoy it, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. Too much.
Yeah, there's that part.
Stop
too.
That. You may not enjoy this. This is punishment. Stop smiling.
Especially in San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco, it's a little hard to gauge. You know? Right. People do actually
like fair
themselves anyhow. So, yeah.
What is the highest ticket item that you have sold?
Yeah, well, that would probably have to be some of the human mummified remains. I mean, those go for quite a bit, but they do cap out, you know. Usually there's a cap of $5,000. So, but, you know, they're worth so much more for other people. So that's kind of a tricky one. Because in selling, there's laws for selling. But on the black market, it's a totally different ballgame. So, you know, someone else is worth a lot more than what I would sell it for. But to me, I have to sell it for a certain amount. Does that make that's a roundabout answer, but that's just how it is. I mean, there's all these laws that keep us from
sure
getting into trouble.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I catch your drift. So are you having fun with the show?
Yeah. Oh, no, the show's definitely fun. I mean, the show's great. You know, walking into people's collections is always fun. And mm-hmm. you know, taking a camera crew with you just makes it even funner. It's and
yeah,
you feel
we're
here.
I mean, what was that one thing?
We gain access to so many more collections than we had before. Now that we have a camera crew with us, people want to show off.
Yeah, that's true. They do. They want to show off, so they're more likely to let you come in and mm-hmm. you know, purchase from them and see their collection. And then there's people that are, you know, completely turned off by the fact of having people other than just us come in and look at their collection.
Yeah.
They don't want anyone to see their collection. So it's kind of in a catch-22, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but it's definitely fun. I mean, you know, there's been times where we've been in situations where it would just normally be Wednesday and I, you know, we have a camera crew here and we're just all kind of looking at each other like, oh, my God, like, this is crazy. But, you know, it makes for an interesting ride home.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, sometimes some people don't want the outside of their house filmed. So it depends on what they are comfortable with because, you know, some of these people are very private and some of their collections
sure.
are pretty out there. And maybe they fear if their neighbors found out or somebody found out that they had, I don't know, mummified heads that something might happen. So, yeah, it's an interesting
yeah,
dynamic.
Right? Yeah. Getting people that actually want to share
that,
some of that.
You probably have a whole new set of weirdo fans now that the show is in.
Yes,
yeah.
We have.
Yeah, I don't think either one of us will argue that at all.
Yeah.
So that brings up what that talk about a segue. Holy cow, it's as if we planned it. All right, at the 10:53 mark, let's bring up the sex symbol item. So what about
symbol?
That? How do you guys feel
Lincoln?
About that? Well, perhaps.
Are you talking about Link?
No, we're talking about the symbol of you.
Huh?
Huh?
Yeah. Sex symbols. That's you, lady.
Oh. I thought you were talking about
balls.
An item that we could sell that was a sex symbol. I'm like, you have a sex symbol item we can sell? What is that?
I just was like, what's the symbol for sex? I don't
so
know.
So how do
one.
You feel about being perceived that way by at least a certain percentage of the, you know, population and the viewership? You hinted around about
hearing
it.
That.
What now?
This is the first we're hearing of that. You just
really
first, yeah.
Liar.
I mean, Wednesday gets a lot of attention. I, you know, I don't know about that.
I saw a fair amount of Audra talk on the interweb.
See, I don't read the interweb stuff. It's scary.
No, seriously.
For like the first 2 days, and I was like, okay, that's enough of that. I don't need to know. But it's flattering if it's happening. I didn't know that it was, but yeah.
Yeah, it is flattering. Kind of surprising. You never know what someone's going to like. I mean, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so everyone has their own taste. And maybe it's just the fact of girls holding interesting things and talking history. It could just scratch some kind of nerd itch, you know, and that's totally great. So I don't know where I'm going.
I'm sure that's what it is.
And that's part of your sex appeal, Wednesday.
Oh, great.
No, I saw the pictures. Were those the ones? I think you have them on your Facebook even for the store anyway. The pictures on the show, there was a photographer. Were those the ones she took? Like what we're using for a Buadra. I mean, that are fairly, you know, different and more glamorous or whatever, you know. They're posed. You're not wearing glasses.
Oh, that was a friend of mine who, she photographs a lot of my friends, Chelsea Wolf and her name, Kristen Gopher. She's an amazing photographer, and she just has a great vision, and she's really fun to shoot with, and she was just like, I want to take some photos of you, and I was like, all right, let's do it. So that's how that came about. It's funny, because when I did look at the pictures, I was like, wow, like, I look totally different than I normally am, because, I mean, I'm talking to, like, talking to me. I'm like, I'm a total, you know, I'm just like, who I am, like, you know. But photos, I don't know. I mean, Wednesday's a pro at that, you know. That's all new to me. I just did what the photographer told me to do. I'm innocent. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure it is surprising to get photos back and it look like a different side of you, because when you do it for kind of a part-time living, you at least get used to that. You get photos back, you're like, that looks like not me, or that looks like me, or that just, I've never imagined I'd look like that. So, yeah, I can understand. Those photos of Audra were wonderful, but I could see how she would look at it going, that looks different. Because,
they were good. They were very nice.
I see many
very
more
nice.
Photo
Thank
shoots
you.
In your future, Audra, so you better get used to it.
Absolutely.
Well, it's fun. As long as I can have my dog, that's all I care about. I managed to squeeze my dog in there, so.
Yeah, that was great.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I think that was
like,
the one we used.
Oh yeah, there's dogs in there, huh?
I think that's the one we used for the show.
Oh yeah.
Well, gosh, it's almost an hour. Hard to believe. Here's a random question. I had heard just through the scheduling issues that Wednesday you may have jury duty. So I was wondering, do you wear? That outfit when you have jury duty, or do we see a different Wednesday?
What I wear in the show is what I wear to the store. Just very comfortable, kind of loose. I mean, it looks elegant, but it's just what I wear normally. It's very comfortable. If I go out, I will heels and something tighter. But so I probably will wear something like that with maybe a little less makeup, because I know on the show we have lights on and, makeup kind of gets washed out, so I'm a little heavier-handed when I know there's going to be a film crew. I don't think that they're going to pick me for jury duty. I've never been picked before. I've been in L.A. and I've been in San Antonio on jury duty. I've never been picked. I don't know why. I'll just go and spend a day there, read a book, and then get sent home.
Yeah,
I wonder if
people think that you like dress up for the show. Like that's actually that's her normal look, you know? I mean, she's not she doesn't dress differently for the show. That's how she dresses. I mean, you know, the only difference is like, you know, sometimes she'll wear jeans and a t-shirt, you know. But I wonder if that's a common misconception that you dress up in a costume for the show, and that's really how you are.
I hear that a lot. And it's not a wig. This is my real hair, people.
And it's very nice.
Thank you. It's going to be on my tombstone. It's not a wig.
Very nice. Your hair is very nice.
Thank you.
Your hair.
It's lovely. And I knew that you dress like that normally.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks.
I already knew all that.
And I dress like
having
that normally,
done extensive
too.
Research.
Yeah, and Audra dresses like that normally.
Yeah.
But she wears killer heels every day. I don't know how she does it, whether we're filming or not filming, she's in some heels. And it's
she
pretty
likes
amazing.
To be tall.
Well, it's sexy. And it's tall. So, yeah, I couldn't do it. I'm more cozy kind of like I wear flats and I'm a little more frumpy. But, yeah, heels, man, she rocks it.
It's fun. I enjoy being a lady.
I know. And nice toes. Yeah, you can do the whole lady thing.
You and didn't Peggy Lee sing that? I enjoy being a girl. So
I know Peggy Lee, but I don't know that one.
She, I think, was that in Oklahoma? It's from
you're
a musical.
The DJ.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, she did. I used to love Peggy Lee. She's still one of my favorite voices.
Awesome.
And a songwriter, too. She wrote a lot of songs. People don't realize that. Anyway, we have bumped up against the barrier, and that was a speedy hour. What a pleasure to talk with both of you.
Thank you.
Really fun.
Yeah, you too.
Really fun.
Thank you.
And we
thank
love the show,
much.
Really, truly do. And you guys are, you know, it would just be another show if you guys, and I include Lincoln, absolutely, you know, weren't as interesting and appealing as you are. And you're not, you know, it's not in an obvious kind of show-busy, garish kind of way at all. It's just like, this is what we do, and these are who we deal with. And it's really, really fun. So, I mean, I think sky's the limit. I think sky's the limit.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you like it.
We do. I do. Yes. And Teresa.
That's awesome.
Teresa, I don't want to speak for you.
Yes. You can speak for me. We love it.
Teresa likes it.
We want to come out and check out the store and check out your
God, yes. That's what I'm thinking. God, too bad.
Yeah.
I don't work for Technorati anymore. It bums me out. I don't have anyone to fly me out there.
Yeah, you'll be able. You won't miss us. We'll be the two normal-looking people that look like we're from Ohio or something.
Well, come on out.
Actually,
on
some of us are
team.
From California.
Oh, but you look like you're from Ohio now, Eric. You've been assimilated.
Oh, I do not.
You are as normal as they come. You are. We're the odd ones. Because we look just like we don't belong.
We know
I belong everywhere. Everywhere.
He's a chameleon.
I am a chameleon. I am the chameleon. All right. Well,
go.
Audra and Wednesday, thanks again so much and continued success with the show. And just hope
everything goes
great for you. And we'd love to have you back and see how things are going down the road here. But good luck with everything, the shop, the show, and
thank you.
And what the heck? You're live.
Thank you. Saturdays.
Thank
science.
You very much.
They actually, they just changed the time slot. So now it's Saturdays Science Channel at 10 p.m. our time. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, they bumped us back a little later. So.
I think it's 10 p.m. all over. It's like kind of weird how they do that, Audra, just so you know. It's like 10 p.m. Eastern, Pacific, and Central. I don't know. It's the magic of TV. Yeah, it's magic. I don't know how they do it.
You understand the whole TV part better, so you should probably talk about that.
But you're doing so well.
Trying to pretend that I watch the TV.
That is an excellent point. We should close by mentioning all the important items. Oddities San Francisco, Science Channel, Saturday night at 10 p.m. Your shop, Love to Death, right there on The Hate in San Francisco. And let's see, you guys have a website, right? It's lovetodeath.com. What a coinky dink. And that's a wonderful place. And on the Science Channel site, of course, there is a section for the show. So you can go check that out. There's bios on you guys and stuff about the show and episode information. And I know Wednesday has a site, which is very impressive, a very nice
thank you.
Modeling-oriented site. And I was surprised how far back some of the pictures go. I saw kind of like, I don't know, the early 2000s, right?
97. I'm actually 34 years old.
Good God.
Oh, she let it out of the bag. Look at that.
I did.
I'm not telling anyone how old I am.
I have no shame. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been doing this a while.
But, hey, you know what? That's really young.
That's still young. So definitely
34.
Still young, but a lot older than people think I am. Somehow they think
that,
I am.
That I believe.
Yeah.
I have a daughter who's 29, so I figured you were somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah, just slow, a little bit, in the general area.
So Wednesday site is Wednesday morning, with a U. I love
that. As in to be sad.
M-O-U-R-I-N-G. .com. So check her out. And I know you're on Twitter. We have tweeted back and forth a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Audra, what's up with the non-Twitter action?
I tweet through my Facebook. I'm on there.
Oh, through your Facebook.
I got most of this.
Are we not?
And
are
through
you not
the
following?
Shop.
Maybe
okay.
You're not following me. Maybe you
I'm following
actually,
you.
Actually, I am.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Twitter.
The Kool-Aid is consumed. I met you personally. That's the shop. It's through the shop. The address.
Gotcha.
I mean, the name. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, having said all that, people should go check all of that out and watch the show and go buy stuff from you. And there you go.
Thank you. You're a doll.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Really enjoyed it.
We'll be watching.
Good night.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Have a great week, everybody. And hey, guess what, my friends? Believe it or not, even Teresa doesn't know this because I was literally working. I'm sitting here working my fingers to the bone on the computer up until showtime. I have finished with any significant editing, rewriting, or whatever for the last chapter, Bobby Mackey's of America's Most Haunted. I'm in the middle of a final just proofreading run through of the Bobby Mackey's chapter. Then I'm going to do a proofread run through of the entire book. And we're sending that sucker in by the end of the week. So this is a momentous week era thing.
It's congratulations to you.
Thank you. It's very exciting. It really is.
Yeah, that's.
And Teresa really, really is the backbone of the book. It's her experiences. It's her insight that is really the core. She's the veteran ghost hunter, paranormal investigator. And I've been doing some of it for a short period now, last couple of years. But really, I'm kind of the dilettante. I'm the writer guy, the media guy who came in and just kind of, you know, arranging things and editing and whipping it into shape. So everyone should know that this really is kind of Teresa's, this is her testimony.
Unless her testimony. You don't like it, Eric.
And if you don't like it, right, then it's mine. It's all my fault if people don't like it. All right, so having said all that, have a great week, everybody. Thank you so much. Farewell.
You too.
Yeah, thank you.
Good night.
Bye.